reclaim your power, and learn to live your most amazing life with Mike Murphy on The Creation Frequency. Mike explores authentic and relevant truth and powerful conversations with some of the world's most renowned game changers. Level up your life and rewire your program. Think new thoughts and create true freedom. Infinite possibilities, fostering peace and joy with an unfiltered heart. Now, here's Mike Murphy.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Creation Frequency Show. I'm your host, Jacob Keneally, and we're here to dive deep into the world of manifesting and creating a life that you're truly excited about by utilizing the Creation Frequency process. Now, if you're tuning in live, do us a favor, leave a like and share with us a win that you've had over this past week. Drop it in the comments. We would love to hear what you've been up to and what you've been creating, and we'd love to just support you on your journey. So no matter where you are in life, no matter what you're going through, no matter how messy it is, no matter what you've done or what you've gone through or where you've been, we're going to show you on this show how to break free. Break free from your limiting beliefs, break free from past conditioning, break free from your childhood trauma, break free from the obstacles that are really holding you back in life. And today, we're going to continue our discussion from last week on how to break free from addiction. But before we get started, I just want to mention that this show is proudly sponsored by MarkMurphyUnfiltered.com, where you are going to find so many resources, books, trainings, courses, tools, so many resources to help you create and attract the life that you truly want. It really isn't rocket science. It's this specific process that anyone can use to improve their life for the better. And we encourage you to go check out all the resources that are available on MikeMurphyUnfiltered.com. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. Mr. Mike Murphy, welcome and take it away.
Thank you very much, Jacob. Great to be here with you guys again today. So I have a question for you guys out there. What do you do when someone you really love and care about deeply, child, spouse, whatever, that has a serious substance abuse problem? What do you do? It's so frustrating. How do you motivate them, inspire them, or can you to get treatment? That's the topic for today's show. And we're going to go deep into this topic. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I have a lot of experience this. One, I was the kid growing up in an alcoholic home. And then at 14, I became the rebellious kid that left home and just developed his own drug and alcohol problems. Then I became the father of the kid. Oh, no, I became the adult child in the family, taking care of a Skid Row type alcoholic father, which was unbelievable. Then I became a father of four, two of which my kids dealt with serious substance abuse problems. It was so difficult. So I know exactly what you're going through. And I became the spouse dealing with an opiate addiction due to an injury. And so I'm familiar with the guilt, the shame, the hiding. So no matter where you are in this equation, I can relate. In fact, I want to make this offer. If you have a serious issue with someone that you're dealing with, just email me, Mike@MikeMurphyUnfiltered.com. Just drop me a little line of what's going on in your life and with your phone number. And if I think I can help, I will give you a call and we'll try to work that through. Okay. So I'm going to ask Maylia. Maylia was with us last week. Maylia is my niece and she has her own addiction problem as a kid. So I'm going to bring her on here and I want to know how she went through it and what it was like for her. So Maylia, if you would join us now, that would be great. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. How's it going?
Before I ask you a question, I just want to share some stats. Youth drug abuse is a high-profile public health concern, with at least one in eight teenagers abusing an illicit substance in the last year. 61% is drug use went up amongst eighth graders between 2016 and 2020. In just 4 years, drug use went up 61% in our youth. Alcohol abuse went up 62%, and teenagers that have misused a drug at least once, 50%. So it is an epidemic. I don't have to tell you folks that. You see it every day. So Maylia, I know you struggled as a child. So I'm curious, what was your situation when your parents were trying to help you get clean and sober and you were dealing with serious problems? What worked and what didn't as the kid?
Well, there's a lot that didn't work,
yeah,
but
that's important
but
too.
What it did was it just opened the door to showing me or introducing me, allowing me to know that there was something out there that when I was ready, I could get the help, right? And so, I mean, I think I started going to treatment centers when I was 14 was my first one. It was an outpatient treatment center. And what that was, is it just introduced me to the fact that like, hey, there is a thing called alcoholism and addiction, and maybe I'm affected by it, right? It just introduced me to that. But I didn't take that, you know, I mean, it was probably years later when I finally got the message, decided that I was done. So, I mean, there's nothing to say what will and won't work, but just the introduction from someone was like probably the best thing, so that I know that there's something out there when I was ready to take it.
But that happened when you went to your first treatment at what age?
14.
14.
I was 14. Yeah. I went to an outpatient treatment center. And then after that, when I was 16, almost 17, I went to a behavior modification school because the treatment center didn't work. And I was there for 18 months. And then from that point on, you know, it was just in and out of treatment centers through my adult life. And, you know, the one that worked for me wasn't the high paying, you know, $100,000 treatment center. It was the county funded. I was on welfare, Social Security, or not Social Security, Medi-Cal. You know, I was on the basic county because I was homeless at the time. That was the program that worked.
But why did that one work? And all, because you went from your first treatment was like 14. You didn't quit till you were like 34.
34.
So
yeah.
So that was 20 years of beating your head against the wall, your poor parents. But
yeah,
why did that county one work when all the other ones didn't? What was the difference there?
I mean, I was broken.
Yeah.
I was broken at that point. And that's why, like, I mean, that's why they say, like, you never know when it's going to happen, right? And that's something that I live by today is like, man, I don't know when the light bulb is going to come on for that one addict, you know? And so, like, if they're willing to be in the solution, I'm willing to help, right? I'll take them to a meeting. I'll help them get into treatment, help them go to detox. But then what I've also learned through that is if an addict's not ready and nothing I can do will get them there.
So
that's their own process.
That's something I want to get into in a minute here is being ready. And so how do you inspire and motivate someone to be ready? Because there's three different methods for you parents out there. We're going to deal specifically with parents and children right now. So there's three different systems. There's Alcoholics Anonymous, and they have a program called Al-Anon for people that don't have a substance abuse problem, but have a, you know, it's a family disease, they say, right? So this is a place for you to go. The beautiful thing about Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous is very simple for me. They have 12 amazing steps that are great for any human being to lead a better life. So that's the beauty of that. But let me add, it's only 13% effective when it comes to motivating and inspiring people to seek out treatment. AA is really other alcoholics and addicts treating other alcoholics and addicts, basically through community and talk therapy, pretty much, and working those 12 steps. There's work involved, but it's only 13% effective. There's another method that's effective called the Johnson method, which is basically an intervention where you bring the person into the family and you say, hey, this is what your addiction, your substance abuse problem, this is what it's doing to me. And this is what I'm going to do if you don't get help and do something. So it's more of a fear-based thing, if you will. And then there's the craft methods. And we're going to get into that in a minute, which is a more positive way of to inspire and motivate people. And so the Johnson method has a 30% effective rate when it comes to motivating people to go into treatment. The craft method, which we'll talk about in a minute, has a 64%. And so I want to get into that in a second. But before I do, I want to ask Maylia, now that you're 6 years sober, congratulations, and off of drugs, but you're also a mother of two children, and I know they're too young to have problems. You might see tendencies flowing already, I don't know, but what would you do, okay? And now as an adult parent, and let's say one of your kids at age 18 or 17 or whatever starts going down this wrong path, what would you do as a parent who has this experience as far as inspiring them to stop?
So well, okay. So I like what you said about the Kraft and Johnson method. And I just want to point one thing out. And this is something I would take into consideration when dealing with my kids, right? Because I definitely do see those tendencies with both my children. because both parents are addicts and alcoholics, right? With both of them. And I do really believe that it is a partially, you know, it is partly hereditary.
Yep.
You know, I think there's a lot of other things go into it, but I definitely, you know, you can see it in behaviors because like when we're addicts, it's not, you know, we're not just, it's not about just using drugs, right? It's the behavior. It's the way that we think. It's the obsession and the compulsion. When something feels good, we want to continue to do it over and over and over again, right? At the expense of doing other things. And I see that in my children, right? So I'm kind of holding my breath. And while I like what you said about the Kraft and the Johnson method, right? 30% effective and 64% effective. I want to point out that it's effective with getting people into treatment. Exactly. I'd be interested to see the people that get into treatment, what the success rate is after they complete treatment, yeah. Because that's a completely different story, right? We go into this bubble when we're in treatment and we, you know, they teach us about ourselves and all that stuff. But like the biggest issue for me, and I think for my children, would be to learn how to live and cope without constantly, you know, in the real world. Like, how do you deal with rejection? How do you deal with a breakup? How do you deal with losing a job? How do you deal with not getting into the school that you want or not getting what you want, right? Yep. Because those are all triggers. And I think sometimes our family can be our biggest trigger, right? For relapsing and getting loaded. So I'd be interested to see like the rates of effectiveness as far as the people that use that to get into treatment. It's great, right? You can, it's, yep. Sometimes it's really easy to get into treatment. So for my kids,
here's the thing. If you can't inspire and motivate them, if they have a serious problem, right? And you can't inspire and motivate them to get into treatment, then the odds of fixing this problem are pretty small, right? So yes. Number one, we got to motivate them, inspire them, get them into treatment. Let me ask you about this. So in your life as a parent now, okay, so it comes down to setting boundaries, right? And so as the one with the abuse addiction, so setting boundaries, talk a little bit about that and talk a little bit about the subject of tough love, if you will.
I mean, yeah, setting boundaries is huge for addicts because I know for myself, if I don't have boundaries, I will walk all over whatever it is, right? And I see that with my kids too, right? Like I can't guilt parent because I wasn't around. Right. Where I just give them everything and there is no boundary and they get whatever they want because that just breeds the inability to have boundaries later. Right. And for them to deal with having boundaries. Boundaries is super important. And you know what I do with my kids is like I take them to meetings with me. Yeah, and I see that so much in the rooms. Like I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, I go to Narcotics Anonymous, and I see parents in there with their kids because we learn how to parent from other people who are addicts and alcoholics who are going through the same thing, whose kids are maybe going through the same thing, right? And that shows them that, hey, there is another way. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's just the therapeutic value of one addict or alcoholic helping another, like, is without parallel. And that's like that's a quote from some of that literature, and I firmly believe that, you know what I mean? And I think I talked about that last week. It's having the, you know, having boundaries, having the ability to say no, but the thing is if I don't have boundaries with myself, I can't set them for my children, right? And so I have to learn how to do that through the process of recovery, through working those 12 steps, through self-help, through all of those things, because, you know, how will they learn it if I can't teach them myself? And so, I mean, I bring them with me to show them that there's another way, to show them that people recover, that we go through things, that there's other kids that might be going through the same thing as they're going through, you know? And
your oldest daughter is how old?
She's 11.
And does she know your story?
She knows parts of it. I mean, for what she can understand as an 11-year-old, right? Like, right. She knows that I wasn't around. There's some abandonment. There's resentment there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, she is starting to go to therapy, which I think is really beneficial for her just to be able to talk or sort through. And I think therapy is huge, right? To have someone that you can trust to talk to, because a lot of times we can't go to our families. I can't go to my family with what goes on with me on a day-to-day basis, you know?
Yeah.
And she's 11, and I take her with me to meetings.
I think it's so important for you, especially as he gets a little older, right? you know, she gets to the middle school and all that. These things start to become real to these kids, right? They see it on TV right now. They hear stories. But when they get into middle school, it becomes real, especially in the state of California that you're in. So I think it's really important that you share as much and share your story, because there is a programming effect to that. She'll say, oh my God, you know, I don't want to end up like that. So you're programming her to steer away from those negative behaviors, right? Let me share with you the craft system, right? So they, you know, they're dealing with a significant other. So number one, they want to improve the lives of their significant other. Okay. They want them to reduce their harmful behaviors, and they want to encourage them to get treatment. But it's not pressure. It's, you know, I know this. When I was dealing with my kids, and I'm sure this was true in your case too, and me as a child, right? So here, just real different how the world has changed. My dad, you know, grew up with two alcoholic parents. He got in trouble at 14. He became a ward of the state of California and ended up in juvenile hall. Okay. Fast forward 20 something years later. Okay. I become a juvenile delinquent, habitual runaway, a big troublemaker. And my parents, no one cared. I mean, I got no treatment. No one, I mean, it didn't matter. It was like, you know, back in those days, kids were to be seen and not heard. We're going to party, live our life. And whatever happens to you, happens to you. I mean, and then when I become a father, it's like, oh my gosh, we got to solve this problem. Right. And my first time was when my daughter was only 14 years old or something. And that started a whole nother way. But what I realized than that, what I like about the craft system, and for you guys watching, you know, you can Google all this. There's tons of material out there on YouTube and Google and whatever. But what I realized is all the yelling and screaming didn't do any good. Okay. And all the threatening did absolutely no good. So now if I were to go through this again with another child, I would come from a place of encouragement and love. And so basically what the craftsmen, they teach you to ignore this behavior, this addictive behavior, ignore it, positively reinforce good behaviors, okay, and not enable negative behavior. So you put in boundaries and rules, but it's all positive and there's no yelling. You know, I love the work of Byron Katie, and she says the first act of war is defense. So the moment my daughter would be doing something and I say, oh, you can't do that. Boom, defense. She comes at me and pretty soon we're in a shouting match and everybody just gets frustrated. Nothing gets accomplished. So based on that, how do you feel about that kind of approach, a more positive approach?
I feel like bits and pieces of everything would work, and it's probably going to be a different combination for each person, right? Because, the positive reinforcement, yeah, that's great. You know, and I feel like, you know, showing them like, hey, I'm here for you and I want to encourage you. And, you know, here's another way, you know what I mean? Or here are some options for you, right? But I'm not going to allow this to continue to happen. And that's great. And you know what? I practice that. I mean, I don't practice that with my kids now, but I practice it with the guys in my house. Yeah. You know, when one of them relapses, it's like, okay, let's take you to detox, right? I'm going to take you to detox. I'm going to give you, this is the option I'm going to give you. You can go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You got a curfew. You have all this stuff. I'll even offer to drive them to meetings. Right. Yeah. But if it happens again, you're gone. Yeah. Right. So it's like, that's the hard boundary. That's the hard line. And then there's parameters, right? There's a structure that I'm setting where I'm trying to positively reinforce them and reintroduce them into a program that I know that works. Right. Yeah. And that we base our house on. So in those ways, yeah, I think it's good. But then I have the guys that are, oh, okay, well, that's great. But then they continue and they manipulate and they try and get around the drug testing and they do all that stuff, right? Because we as addicts are super resourceful people, addicts and alcoholics, resourceful. We manipulate, lie, connive, as long as we can get what we need or as long as we can find the ways and means to get more, that's what we continue to do, right? So I think all of that's great. I think that there's a different formula, and I can't say what formula it is for each individual person, but I think it depends on the person that's actually trying to help them as well. I mean, there's so many variables because we as individuals are so different, right? Yep. So different every way. The way you recovered was maybe not the way that I recovered. You know what I mean? It's so.
Well, you said something very interesting and I think holds true, that all parts of these three approaches, there's good in all three of them. And I think it's finding that balance, finding that rhythm And so, for example, the 12-step program, like I said, I mean, the 12 steps are the most powerful way to live that you can ever live. Honestly, if you want to be authentic and transparent and free and whole, follow those 12 steps. So I encourage everybody to look at that. The Johnson approach, where you have an intervention, and I've had a number of these too, right? Which is a really good approach so that they can see how the level, but I think the more positivity we can bring into that intervention, the more positivity we can bring on the 12 steps, focus on the power of the 12 steps, and perhaps, you know, steer clear of, you know, too many meetings. Okay. Sometimes I find that the meetings can be a crutch or an excuse, or, you know, to just show up and not really be engaged. So I think meetings are most effective when I'm there to help others. That's when meetings are super powerful. But if I just go every night to drink coffee, smoke a cigarette, and hear the same stories and tell the same story, I'm not sure that's fully productive as much as I'm thinking about your guys in your sober living house, right? If they could all find something greater than themselves, a purpose in their life. And so that will propel them to the desire to get off drugs, to get off alcohol, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm imagining most of those guys, they don't have a big purpose. They're not thriving. They're barely surviving. So there is very difficult. So if we could find a way to inspire them and give them a purpose in their life, and I would say that the easiest purpose is, hey, let's get out of ourselves and let's go to a meeting. Let's find someone we can help. Let's find someone less fortunate than us and lift them up. And I feel that would have a big effect. And I think that's true in the family situation as well, is that, you know, I look back on my 14-year-old daughter, and it went on for 4 years of pure hell. But I will tell you, there's so many things that we tried just out of desperation. And I think one of the biggest things we did, and this was for people that have money and resources, and you have a kid you're really struggling with, we literally had her picked up at 4 a.m., taken to Utah mountains in the middle of the winter, 5,500 feet, and she didn't see a building for 3 months. If she wanted fire, she had to learn to make it with straw, a rock, and a piece of wood, right? So that broke her down. Now, she still needed a lot more help and recovery. And so, but here's the thing. A lot of people say tough love, and pretty much they give up on the kid in a way, right? I could never do that. I could never give up on my kid. Even when she was 18 years old and in jail, I said, I got to get this kid out of jail. So there's a fine line there. So in your case, you were 34 and you were homeless. You had nowhere to go. So you had to get help. And the trick is, how do we do it sooner, faster, until they hit that rock bottom? You know what I mean? So any thoughts on that?
You know, everyone's rock bottom is so different, but I what you were talking about in the beginning is finding a way to get out of yourself.
Yeah.
And like, gosh, yeah, meetings are great. All of that stuff is great. And, you know, part of like what the creation frequency, right? What your book teaches us is to be of service, right? And that's the same thing with these 12-step programs. It's like being of service, right? And like, how do we create this life where we have purpose? And they do that in meetings. They do, you know, you find a way to give back, and it makes you feel, your self-esteem goes up, your self-worth goes up, the way that you feel, what you get back, watching people, you know, overcome whatever they're overcoming because you're being of service. Yeah. Is like, I mean, that really, you know, it's rebuilding who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and helping someone get to their rock bottom, it's so hard, but like, I mean, no one knows what anyone's rock bottom. I know people have been clean and sober for 10 years and they go back out, you know what I mean? And some of them don't make it back. Okay. And, you know, I went to one of those behavior modification schools for a long time. And so, you know, I get that, but you know what? I wasn't done after that. Right. Like I continued to use for another 15 years.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's just, I really, really believe in just like showing people that there is another way, you know, have that intervention. Sometimes we need to hear the truth because we can't face it.
Yeah.
We don't recognize the pain and what we're doing to other people because we're so wrapped up in this selfish and self-centered disease where we just can't, we won't even look at how we're affecting other people. Right. So those interventions are, I think, a really big deal. I mean, I remember sitting in a jail cell calling my daughter. I remember that pain, right? And I remember going to see my daughter after not seeing her for months. And she was like, mommy, you came back, right? Mm. Like, she didn't think I'd ever come back. And like, at wow. that moment, I recognized what I was putting her through, right? Yeah. But I continued to use because it wasn't my bottom. And it's a crazy, I mean, I can't, you know, there, and that's why I say like, there is no one fix, right? But I think interventions are great because sometimes we need a really hard look at who we are and what we're doing to people. And yep. maybe that would be someone's bottom, you know? And then maybe we need that encouragement when we've been out on the street living in a tent and we just have nowhere else to go, you know? We yep. need that encouragement and like to know that people still love us. Maybe that's that hope. Maybe that's the catalyst to like go into a meeting and get some help, right? Yep. Like every, and it's, God, I just, it's all of those things. It's all of those things used at different times. It's a different formula. And then being of service, like, especially in early recovery, like cleaning out the ashtrays, yep. you know, getting some coffee, just going to a food bank. I mean, you did that in November. You went and gave out turkeys, like doing stuff like that. You feel good right. helping other people, getting outside of that selfish, self-centered, you know, obsession and compulsion to only feed yourself yep. is, you know, then you build back who you are. You pick up the pieces and you put them back together.
So let's so
hopefully that answered it.
Yep, perfect. Good answer. Let's recap this for the viewers and listeners. So if you're dealing with a child and well, it has a serious substance abuse, I know exactly what you're going through and it's miserable and I get it, but you need to take care of yourself. So I would strongly suggest you check out Al-Anon, which is part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Strongly suggest you look at those 12 steps and go through that process. There's a great book called The 12 by 12 where it breaks down each step one by one. And it's so healing and so powerful. So it will help you go through this terrible dilemma that you find yourself in. That's number one. Number two, an intervention. If you haven't already done it, there's just Google it, how to do it. Go to YouTube. There's a lot of videos on it and have that intervention. And then check out the CRAFT method, which I believe comes from a more positive and a more less confrontational and a more empathy, more love. And that approach seems to be working. You know, back in the day, AA was all we had. Then Al-Anon was all we had. And these things evolve, right? Consciousness evolves. Recovery evolves. Everything evolves. So we need to evolve with it. So keep an open mind. Look at all these things. Pray. I love the power of prayer because you're going to need it. You need help. You need something to higher, bigger than yourself to rely on as you go through because it can be devastating. So Maylia, I hope you can join us next week. Maylia had a serious heroin addiction. I had a pill opiate addiction, which is the same thing, except you don't put a needle in your arm. So we're going to take a deep dive into opiates next week and how to overcome that and how to make that work. So I hope you'll join us next week for that subject. And thank you, Maylia. I see you're in Hawaii. Enjoy the rest of your vacation. We'll see you next week. And we're going to thank you. Mahalo. I'm going to end the show today. So let's end it with a powerful intention. I'm going to do two real quick, right? So one is for the parent or the person dealing with someone in their life. And the other one is someone that's dealing with an addiction or a substance abuse. All right, ready? This is how I would write an intention because there's no difference between imagination and reality. I am so grateful that my child has found recovery. I got my little boy or my little girl back and I love it. I am so thankful for all the people that have helped us on this journey. And I am so grateful for all the programs that helped us help this person get back to being their normal. Not only are they normal again, they're better than normal because the tools they've used, the higher power that they've found has radically transformed their life. So I just give thanks and gratitude, dear Heavenly Father, for having this change and effect in my life. And I just give thanks and I'm so grateful for my loved one now being fully in recovery. Okay. Second intention I was right, if I'm struggling, and there's no difference between imagination and reality. So you're going to have to write this and record it and listen every morning, every night, but it'll go like this, even if I'm drinking or using drugs. I am so grateful that I am in recovery. I am so grateful for every sober breath that I breathe in. I am so grateful for my new community and for my new life. I love waking up each morning full of love and hope and gratitude. And I love how I'm able to contribute to other people's lives and lift them up as they go through these difficult times. Amen.
Thank you guys for talking about this topic that is just so important in today's world. And before we wrap up the show, I just want to remind everyone that as we're launching this podcast, we would really appreciate if you left some feedback and left us a review wherever you're listening, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever it is. Your feedback truly means more than you know to us. And as a little gift, if you do that, we'll send you something. You just go to mikemurphyunfiltered.com/mysterygift. It'll have all the instructions on that page after you've left your review, and we'd really appreciate it. So that's all we have for this week. I hope you all will tune in next Thursday. And with that, thanks for tuning in, and we can't wait to see you again. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Mike Murphy on The Creation Frequency. Thanks for tuning in, and don't miss the next show on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Mike Murphy and a cast of powerful guests strip away the veil of limitation using the groundbreaking practices of the Creation Frequency. For more information on Mike and his work, visit MikeMurphyUnfiltered.com.